Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Helen Wyman, and you're listening to the Wheel Suckers podcast.
Hi, I'm your captain, Alex. I look after social media marketing and events at Look Mum No Hands, and I'm joined by my stoker,
Jenny.
What do you do, Jenny?
I'm the director of the London Bike Kitchen. I run a DIY bike workshop where people can learn how to fix their own bikes through classes, drop-in sessions, and our women and gender variant wag nights.
We are joined by a very special guest.
Hello.
Please say your name.
My name is Helen Wyman.
And what do you do, Helen Wyman?
I am a professional cyclocross rider.
Wow. Oh my God.
Amazing.
Sounds better than it is.
No. So that's some stats. Cool. That you started at the age of 14.
Yeah.
And you were a pro. Were you a pro by 23?
So I started riding a bike before I could walk, basically.
What?
But then I started racing when I was 14, because my brother, we were out riding and we met a guy from the local cycling club, and my brother was like, yeah, I want to have a go at that. And so we joined the club, and then because he did it, I had to do everything he did and try and do it better. And so I did. And then when I was 18, I went to university and I was training to be a physiotherapist. So my work placements were took up my summertime, so I could no longer do road racing, and I took up cyclocross, and then
which is a winter sport,
and I could ride to my placements, so it was really easy. And you didn't need to train long distance, you could get away with lots of short training. So I went to work, and then when I was 23, I won my first national race in the UK. And at the time, the Great Britain manager needed riders for the Olympic program the following year, so I rode in all their road races, and then the next year I was top 10 in World Cups, and then quit my job, and the rest is history.
Amazing. Here we are.
Wait, Olympic program for cyclocross?
No, for road.
I was like, there's Olympics.
No, it was 2004, and it was the road Olympics, and they needed riders to fill out the team, because they'd already had their, they knew who was going to the Olympics, but they needed six riders for a team, and I was pretty good, so I did a load of road racing.
Cool.
And this year marked your 10th win, was it?
10th national title, yeah, in cross. That's pretty cool. 10 in 12 years or 13? 10 in 13 years. One year I didn't race. Last year I didn't race because I still had a broken collarbone. So.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. The broken collarbone.
That happened.
It's the story you got back on pretty quick.
So, yeah, so European champs, a rider's foot went in my front wheel and turned the wheel, so I stopped instantly. So it was at the start as well. We were doing 45-50k an hour, and I went zero, and so I got concussion and stuff, and I had to broke my collarbone, smashed up my legs, my face, my arms.
Oh my God.
So I ended up having it pinned a couple of days later, and so because of that, within 10 days I could get back on the trainer, but I couldn't really walk very well because I had these massive scabs. Yeah, I had these massive, they did an amazing job in Belgium of cleaning up everything, and I was pretty much in a daze for the first 10 days, and then I went on a trainer for 20 minutes and was so happy with myself. But I couldn't ride outside again until 3-4 weeks later. And it did hurt for quite a long time, and then I was allowed to ride off-road in December, so that was nearly 6-7 weeks later. And then I did my first race back was a World Cup, and then the second race was Worlds.
Nice.
Wow.
Did you have the fear? Or were you cool, let's go?
The second race was, the second race had lots of sharp descents, and it was really icy. So there was actually, and it was quite hard going, for trying to create your own form of suspension, and so it made the collarbone hurt quite a lot. But yeah, it was, that race was, but since then not so much.
Good. Was that your first big crash? Have you had quite a few crashes previous?
Yeah, you crash all the time in cross, but I've never hurt myself. Like, that's the first time I've broken anything in my life. Wow. So it was, yeah, and that was traumatic crash. It wasn't like you fell off and broke your collarbone, or it was like, crash. You know, it was pretty crazy. I don't remember anything for like the first 2 hours afterwards, really. Oh, wow. I just remember hearing Steph's voice and then screaming and then not remembering anything else after that, really. So
it was pretty
horrendous.
For how long you've been riding for that to be your first, I mean, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah And like,
you avoided it,
so
somehow
avoided it.
It was like painful, and there was a doctor there that used to race. She was world champion in cross, and she was there for the French team, and so she knew me, and she was like, oh, okay, we'll give her an injection to get rid of the pain. And so she gave me this really strong painkiller of some description, but it gave me cramps. So in the ambulance, like, I really didn't know where I was, and I kept asking Steph, like, where are we? What do we do? And like, well, how did I do this? Where? And then I said, how did Amira do, who was the young rider we were looking after at the time? And every time Steph's like, oh yeah, she got such and such, and yeah, you were at the European champ, she crashed, and then I'd go, oh, cramp, and then he'd have to like move a leg or something, and then I'd say, where are we, what are we doing, like, and then I'd go, oh, cramp, and then he'd have to move another leg, and so it was like this, for him it was a nightmare. And then we told Amira, and that I kept asking how she did, and Amira said, why didn't you just tell her I won, at least she'd be happy for 5 minutes.
Oh my god.
It was fun times.
So I've just written UCI. What have you done for, did you work for UCI?
No, I was on the cyclocross commission. So the way the UCI works is that you have commissions for each discipline, and those people decide the rules, and then they take it to the management committee, and the management committee agree the rules or not agree the rules, depending on what they want to do. So we propose what's going to happen, they agree or disagree, and then it becomes the rules of that sport. So I was put on as a token woman when Brian Cookson put women on. And I mean, at the time I'd written a piece about the world championships were in America, and the men have this rule that if you're in the top 50 and the top three from your nation have to select you, they have to put you on the team. And there wasn't a rule for the women. And so at that world championships, because it's expensive, France didn't send one of their riders who was 11th in the world ranking, and Denmark wouldn't send their rider who was 25th in the world ranking. And so I wrote this piece, this opinion piece, and it went viral, basically. And then someone set up a thing that said we want the same rules for the women, and it got something like 120,000 signatures. And every time someone signed, it went to Brian Cookson. Nice. And they kind of thought it was me. It wasn't me. And the woman who did it was fantastic for doing it. But because of that, they kind of like, we need a token woman on every commission, and she's vocal, it's better to have her in-house, is basically, I think, why they asked me. And I said yes and was like, yeah, I'm in. Yeah, let's change this.
Yeah.
Did you make changes then?
Yes. So the first thing we did was change the top 50 rule for the world championships. The second thing was we made a rule that every women's race has to be immediately before the men's, because in Belgium they were putting us on at 10:30 in the morning. You don't get any fans, any spectators. Start money's terrible when that happens. And so we changed that rule. And as a direct consequence of that, the other major series in Belgium that was putting the women before the men went to get television coverage for us. And because of that, the first series then made an overall prize fund. And because of that, the other series did other things. And so now we have 35 races live on television in Belgium. We have prize money for both overall series. There's much better start money for the other series, because they didn't need to pay start money. Now they do, because they need good riders. So that was another change we made. We made UCI professional teams, started that, and they have to have a woman. You have three riders count for your overall ranking, and one of them has to be a woman. They equalised C1 and C2 prize money. It took me a long time to get that, but at the very end, so this season it started. We have equal prize money in everything except the World Cup.
And everything except?
Yeah, and the World Cup I worked on for 4 years, I gave them like 8 different propositions as how to do it, and not a single one they agreed. But the overall is closer now. It's only about €10,000 difference. But each individual round of the World Cup, the men get €40,000 in total. We get 10.
Wow.
So it's a huge, huge difference that for that.
Yeah.
But Trek did equalise. The Trek World Cup in America was equal prize money for men and women. And they did that off their own back for the first time. Also on the commission, I got some under-23 women's world championships. And we have a junior women's world championship from 2020. There's a few other things that relate to men and women. But most of the stuff I was trying to do was for the women. I got us our race time. It says 40 minutes, but we were having like 35 minute races because you just have to be close to 40 minutes. And so I asked for 50 minutes the entire time, but they wouldn't do that. But instead they said it has to be a minimum of 40 minutes, which now means that every race is over 40 minutes. And hopefully, yeah, in the next 4 years, they can make it 50.
Why is race length
different
time?
So
important.
It's done because the conditions,
not distance.
Yeah, so the conditions can make such a huge difference to the race. So, you know, if you said it's 5 laps, that might be on a super fast race, that could only be 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But on a crazy muddy race like Valkenburg, that could be an hour. So it's the men's race for an hour, the women's race for 40 minutes. And I believe both should be 50, personally.
Mm.
But we need to progress. We should, if the men are going to be an hour, we should be an hour too, but we should progress to that. You can't say 40 minutes to an hour straight away because nobody's trained for that. So I think
like
it should be
steps. We're kind of
creeping
up. Creeping towards quality.
Yeah.
Crawling.
Trying to get grass.
Too much, yeah.
Yeah, so.
But do you feel confident that it's changed, you know, from your time?
I genuinely believe that the attitudes of the people on the commission have changed significantly in 4 years.
Cool.
The unfortunate thing is that they ditched half of us and put another half in. So now you have to change those attitudes again from the beginning.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that happened?
A change of presidency. And anyone that the new president feels was akin to Brian Cookson would have gone.
Mm.
But every time a new president comes in, he wants to do new things, you know, he wants to make his mark. So
yeah.
They didn't need a token woman anymore because the athletes, there's an athletes commission and there's a male and a female representative from every discipline and they're elected to that by their peers. So there's a male and a female cyclocross representative on the commission now.
Okay, so there's already, yeah,
there's
already.
They don't need the token woman.
That's just a given, you have one male.
Good.
Yeah,
that's good. That makes it easier.
That's good.
And it's probably that I caused too much fuss. They were like, yeah, we're done with her. We can get rid of her.
You were one of the people that was let go.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm no longer on it. But I did 4 years and I think I made as much progress as I could.
Yeah.
And I was at the point where I was like, if they asked me again, I would have to really consider whether I wanted to or not, because it's really political.
Is it voluntary?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's really slow moving, and it's the only thing I wanted to get done next was the World Cup, and I had resistance to that for 4 years. So how am I going to change it in the next four?
I was going to say maybe you feel tired. I think we see a lot of this. You just put all this, your energy, and then eventually you just kind of run out.
I can't find
gas.
Anymore.
There was a moment, yeah, like that.
Yeah. Sounds amazing. Sounds hard work.
It's encouraging people to do what's right and encouraging them to do it quicker and encouraging them to understand that there's only so much money in sport. And when you have this pie of men cycling and you can't make it any bigger, you're not going to get anything else in. But you can add cream on top, which is the women's. And the women have this whole new, open up this whole new field of money that can come into the sport, and by bringing it into the women's side of the sport, you actually grow the men's. And so everybody knows in their hearts this is how you do it, but it's changing attitudes really. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest part.
I guess plugging the money aspect could help, but
well, off the back of the television coverage, the Galazzo, who run one of the big series in Belgium, got Isoborg, which is a ice cream company. to come in and sponsor the women's race. And they only sponsor the women's race. So we are bringing more money to the sport because of the television. And the teams all want a woman, because why would you not want an hour's extra television coverage for your sponsors? So money talks.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, but we're at a point where money's talking for the women in cross. So
That's really good to hear. And then speaking of money, I saw you're over 100% on the Helen 100.
Yeah.
What percentage? You've hit it.
What's the Helen 100?
Yeah, tell us.
What is the Helen 100?
So the Helen 100 is we want to get 100 under 23 women to race the National Cyclocross Championships in January 2018. And we want to do that.
Wait, that was...
Now it's 2017, so next season. 2019. Well done.
What year is this?
Jesus. I'm a bike rider. Why do I need to know what dates
are? You just need to race.
Yeah. So we want 100 women in the under 23 age group. So up to anyone under that age. And when you look at nationals this year, there was only like 25, 30 elite women. And there was probably about 45 under 23s. And so you could say, well, you should actually get more elite women. But for us, for me, in my mind, how you get those women to stay in the sport and to become elite is how you actually make that category sustainable in the future. So you could say, okay, we want 100 elite women now, but are they going to stay in the sport? Mm. Whereas if you get the under 23s engaged and loving it, maybe there you could get 20 of them to stay, and then your elite category becomes 55, not 35.
Get them young.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And that age group is the age group where women in general leave sport and don't do sport because of...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Peer pressure, because of social pressures, whatever it is that's driving them to not do it, is the reason why I want them to. Because even if they don't become professional cross riders, which isn't the aim of the Helen 100, the aim is to grow the sport under 23 level, is... you gain so much confidence from learning. You just learn so much from bike racing or from any kind of competitive sport, because you can set goals which are achievable for you, which give you confidence. You race against your peers, your friends. You find friendships which last a lifetime. And they do, because they're people that you like, not people that you're put in the same school class as, you know? And to me, cycling is freedom, cycling is confidence, cycling is a load of skills that you can carry into normal life, but it's in that impressionable age group of 16 to 20, basically, are when you form your opinions in life, and when you form your ideas and your personality really becomes you, because you're no longer told what to think by your parents or school or something like that. And that influence can be really good for those people. So, and that's something aside. But we wanted the under 23s. to help them because we thought that would be good to pay for their entry to the race. And so we've achieved that. And so we relaunched yesterday because there was more money over that as well to put some money towards doing some cyclocross clinics in the UK so that we can actually engage these riders and we can talk to the local leagues because we know they have young female riders and we can get those riders to come together to do the clinics so that we can actually get them to want to do nationals. And then from that point, yeah, hopefully afterwards stay in the sport. You never know.
That's awesome. Are you going to focus on mainly the UK with the Helen 100?
Yes, it's entirely UK based.
And it's so only under 23?
Under 23 women. Unfortunately.
Come on.
I want to
You can do nationals. No one's stopping you doing nationals.
Can I pretend? That's yeah. Like, put some braces on.
Yeah, it's just for under 23 women just because...
For those reasons, which is awesome.
Yeah, and starting, working younger, grassroots, I think working upwards, because, to get elite now, it doesn't work like that.
There are some riders that come in, in their mid-20s to mid-30s that start the sport, and they can be just as successful. But I just think that if a lot of young people... Every time you go, I only really race nationals in England. Because I don't have the time, I'm racing other races abroad. But when you go back to nationals, you see all these young people and they're so excited to see you and so excited to get your autograph and take a photo with you and stuff. And if I have that influence just by being a person that's doing my sport, then maybe by actually communicating with them and actually getting these riders to come to clinics and teaching them something, and maybe they'll actually look at me and go, oh, actually, I want to be like that, and I want to be a cross rider, or I want to ride my bike all the time. And if I can influence them to keep in the sport just because of what I've achieved, then maybe I need to engage with them to actually get that influence.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that actually, that also the added value of this is that they can talk to you.
Yeah.
They're your 100, they're your kind of fleet.
Yeah.
Deploying this kind of army, but the added bonus of being like, oh, Helen paid for it. And they, you're such amazing on social media as well. Anybody can just tweet you and...
Yeah, ask them questions. Oh, you just ask anyway, don't we?
Amazing knowing, each one of them like, oh, Helen, I'm worried about this, or oh, how do I do that? And having a mentor, I think, in any field is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm quite accessible anyway, like I say, but also there are quite a few young riders, 14, 15-year-olds. Last year we did a load of clinics, and any of those girls that were on the clinic, I was like, yeah, send me a message anytime. And the boys as well. So I've helped out a few riders this year to get them on the right path into what races they should do and stuff like that. And I'm always there to be communicated with. But sometimes, if you don't know that person, you're not going to... If you've never met me, you're probably not going to send me a Facebook message and say, I want to do this race, how do I do it? But once you have met me, maybe, the engagement works better, I don't know.
I kind of want to know, logistics-wise, are you going to kind of pick people for this 100, or it's going to be a kind of application process?
No, so we're working with the organiser, Hugh Williams, and anyone that signs up, it's free, basically. If we're looking like we're not going to get 100... then we're also trying to, at the same time right now, we're trying to communicate with the different leagues to try and see if they've got riders that they want to hook up and stuff like that. So we'll see how the process works fully, but the money's there, it's with the organiser, so, and he'll be out, he knows who's entering his race, so.
Yeah, I don't think you'll struggle. I don't know the numbers, but I feel confident.
Yeah, that's good.
We've got confidence.
Good. Yeah,
it's going to happen.
I wanted to talk about these cards.
Yeah.
Because we had a funny experience with Condor Claire Beaumont. She rides the Vicious Fellow.
Yeah.
Just that she went to a Belgium cyclocross race.
Yeah, she went to Koppenberg, I think, this year.
And they were queuing up for the cards.
Signed cards, yeah.
She just was like, what? What?
Yeah.
She was kind of shocked by it and kind of confused. And the funny story is that they made them, but they made them Top Trumps style. And she said that they were just like, no.
I was like, you're really close, but it's still not right.
Yeah.
At what point did you have to make cards?
Yeah, so I've had cards for a long time. You can get them on Vistaprint. They're really cheap. And
is there a template?
Like a postcard.
Like
the
rules.
Is there a guide? They should
fill in the blanks.
They should be postcard size. Yeah.
Really? Oh wow.
Yeah, and so some people do bigger, some people do smaller, but the postcard. So we call them postcard pervs, but. They're not actually all like that. Like, there's loads of really nice kids and stuff that come along, and you want to give them a card because it's exciting for the little kids. You know, they take it home and they like put on their wall and stuff, and that's really cool. And there are genuine fans that collect cards. But there's also a select group we call postcard pervs, and they're the ones that come around and ask for four.
Four?
Yeah. And it's like, I don't want to know where the other three are going. Thankfully.
They're not selling them though as well, are they?
They do.
Is there
they
kind
do.
Of yeah.
Yeah, they do sell them to people that don't go to the bike races, and then
they want to
they
have
can get them signed and stuff like that.
I was there.
No.
I wasn't really.
Yeah. There, but I was.
But there was one guy that came around last year particularly. He was really bad year before last. And after like the fourth time he came around and asked for four, Steph just gave him this wadge of them and went, don't come back this season. Because they are the same people. And it's like, you were here last week. You were here yesterday.
With like a mustache.
Yeah.
So he's wearing glasses.
Glasses, yeah. Scarf.
Different hat. And you're like, I know.
Yeah. Seriously, who are you trying to kid? Yeah. But there are genuine postcard collectors that have these huge collections for years and years. Some people come up to you. They only go to like one or two races a year. And they come up to you with seven different ones from the last 7 years and get you to sign them.
Wow.
And you're like, wow, I don't even remember that one. So.
I have a secret joy for it because it just makes me think of like train spotters or, you know, and it's like, I love it so much, but it just goes off to that other end ever so slightly.
I'm more curious about kind of how that is part of the Belgian cyclocross thing, culture, because I feel like it's a different world and it's being televised in Belgium and you've got these massive crowds, whereas here it's people are like, what, cycler what? Like,
yeah.
What? Why would you do that?
Yeah, it is a completely different... Belgium is its own epicentre for cyclocross. You get 20,000 fans at every race.
What?
And it's live on television.
It's like NASCAR.
It is like NASCAR. And they have... So the television viewing figures, you get around 600,000 to 700,000 watch the men's races, and you get around 5 to 6 and a bit watch the women's. So the difference, 600,000 for a country with only 5 million people, because it's just the north of Belgium, that is ridiculous viewing figures. And when you look at, it's something like on average, it's around 60% of the market share watch women and men cyclocross.
That's just the Flemish bit.
Yeah. And so you look at the day for the top 10 on, say, a race like Koppenberg, and Koppenberg men's race might be 4th and Koppenberg women's race would be 6th viewing figures for the day.
Mm.
And so it's a completely different world. It is like NASCAR. It's a completely different world. And then you go outside of Belgium, even to Luxembourg, and there might be 1,000 spectators. And you don't pay to go in, whereas in Belgium everyone pays. You go to... It's very much an elite-driven sport. So you have juniors, under 23, elite women, elite men. You go to America, they have 2,000 people racing on a day across all the categories, and they are what fund the race. Whereas in Europe, your spectator paying his €15 to go watch funds the race along with a sponsorship for television.
Wow.
So it's two completely different models.
Mm.
And it does only really work in Belgium. Outside of Belgium, it's much harder to get that kind of spectatorship. Even Holland, even if it's in the series that's a Belgian-based series, they don't cross the border to go to Holland. It's like, you know, you might get 5,000 spectators in Gieten, which is a 3.5-hour drive from Belgium. Whereas if you put it on the border, you get 20,000. It's just, it is crazy. It's just, and the Belgians really embrace it, and it's like their sport, and it's their love, and it's... If you ever spend time in Belgium, you understand why it is cyclocross is so popular.
I also from Claire, we learned about what she described it as the rut.
Yeah.
Mm.
What were your thoughts on the rut or cycling into the rut?
Yeah, commit to the rut.
Commit to the rut.
It's easier said than done, but committing to the rut, like the World Championships this year, everybody committed to the rut, and the rut was up to your bottom bracket. It was so high that you had to actually start a new rut because it was too deep to ride in.
Wow.
So,
is it like a groove? in yeah. a curve?
Is, or, yeah. It could be on the corners, it could be on a downhill, it could be on an off camber, because where everybody rides the same line, it creates this groove. And if you don't get in the groove, you might slide down the hill because you don't have the grip. So the grip, it's like being in rails, you know, you get into the rail and it holds you in and gets you down the hill. So
like riding a tram track.
Yeah, but there's other ruts. So sand ruts are different. So in a sand, you want to be in a sand rut because it's faster, because it's actually, you found the hardest ground and that's the fastest way to get through. But you really have to commit to the sand rut, because any little bit offline and it just flicks you straight over the handlebars or off somewhere else, or and you crash. It doesn't hurt when you crash in sand, but it's pretty epic when you do, and you normally get a face full of it, so it's just never fun. But in sand, there's like 5 or 6 ruts, and you just have to choose which one to commit to, and you hope it's the best one.
Work.
Yeah, basically. And then when you get in mud
now, it's like,
and then when you get in mud, now again, that's different. If it's a flat mud and there's like 20 different ruts, you really have to choose the right one, because that might have hit a bit of solid ground underneath, and it might fire. If it gets wet, you can't see in it. You just have to hope that that's the right one. And then you've got frozen ruts, which are horrible.
Ooh.
And they really do, when you get out of them, they hurt when you crash because the ground's frozen.
Frozen kind of, yeah.
So there's all kinds of ruts. There's not just one rut.
But you have to commit to all of them.
You have to commit to all of them, basically. Yeah.
Wow.
And sand.
Well, go with the flow. Maybe.
Sand ruts you have to approach with really good speed and commit at the same time, which is actually quite hard work to not go, oh my god, I'm gonna die and break.
Yeah.
You have to commit full gas to those ones.
I've had that bit with track I did, you know, in the curve.
Yeah.
And they're like, you need to go fast, go up it, you know, and you're like, no.
Yeah.
I want to go.
Oh, I love it.
I want to go really slow.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. It sounds similar to, I just did a like a mountain biking technical session over the weekend, and cyclocross sounds like a cross between road and mountain biking, where it's like a more technical form of road racing.
Yeah,
you're not just going in a straight line. Like, have to handle the bike and do turns and.
Yeah, there some courses are particularly mountain bikey, and some courses are particularly fast. And then there's cyclocross skills, which you don't get in anything else. So like sand. Sand riding, you never experience anything like
it.
It's
horrible.
It's fun. It's so much fun.
Riding. Yeah, you have the right tires, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's when you achieve something, it's exciting. Yeah, going down a sand descent is amazing. Without brakes on.
I really want to try it.
It's fun.
I love a good descent.
Do you have any plans for next year other than just cracking on? Or?
Yeah, cracking on, really. Pretty much.
Committing to the 100.
Yeah. Committing to more ruts. My plans for next season are to get faster and better skills and more results, basically. I have some goals, but I'm not ready to share them yet.
Okay. Big
races do you have?
Oh, every race.
All of them.
Yeah, World Cups, World Championships, European Champs, Nationals, all of the DBV series, everything, basically. I had 4 goals this year, and I achieved 3 of them. So next year, I have 3 different goals. Because this year I had to move up the world ranking. I was 30th after my crash from last year, and I ended up 5th in the world at the end of the season. So that I was really proud of that. That was something I wanted, because it means your start row, your start position is based on your world ranking. So you want to be in the top 8 because it gives you a front row grid. So that was a goal. I achieved that. I wanted to win Nationals. I achieved that. And I wanted to win Koppenberg, and I did that. So I just didn't get a medal at Worlds. That was my last goal.
So you're ranked 4th in the world.
5th in the world, yeah.
5th?
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Yeah, I went from 30th, which is really, really tough to do. And so I went from like 500 points to 1,530.
Cool. Other than commit to the rut, one piece of advice for anybody getting into cyclocross?
Enjoy it. Smile, and in every race do something which scares you, because it means that you'll achieve more the next time.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Helen.
No worries.
Thank you.
If you like what we do, don't forget to like, rate and subscribe.
And share with a friend.
Yeah,
that one friend.
You know that friend that likes cycling and podcasts?
Yeah.
There's a lot of them out there.
Yeah. The goofiest one. Choose
them,
that one.
Send them this podcast.
Yes. That's all from us.
Bye, friends.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.